This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's currently the 16th of October 2010 here in Japan, and I'm joined on the line once again by Lieutenant Eric Shine, the man behind CrossingTheRubicon.org and MartialLaw911.com. He's also the host of In the Zone on Republic Broadcasting on Saturday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific time. So, Lieutenant Shine, thank you for joining me again today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you, James, for having me.
Well, I would highly encourage listeners of this interview to go and listen to the interview that we did the other day, talking about the decision on appeal that has been given on your case before that was been before the Coast Guard. So again, let's just summarize what that was about, and then we'll get more specifically into the decision on appeal.
Well, the Coast Guard, a special branch of military that I'm not in, that's not supposed to be a branch of military, that's been changed into a branch of military under the cover of the launching of the war in Iraq in March of 2003, when it was moved from not the Department of Defense, but the Department of Transportation, where it resided, into the newly found, newly created Department of Homeland Security, which was originally going to be called the Department of Homeland Defense. And they are under the impression that they can file charges and civil complaint. And they're trying to say that this is an administrative proceeding, although they filed charges against me and a civil complaint. Within their own military or system of military tribunals, they've even stated within these proceedings that it's an Article 32 proceeding, that they've had me in for the last 8 years. They even went as far as in the final order that just came out, which is called a Commandant's Decision on Appeal, blamed me, somebody who they're declaring to be mentally ill, with the fact that it took 8 or 10 years for them to do this.
How can they get away with this? I mean, what are...
Because no one else is doing anything. I'm on my own against a branch of military that most people... a lot of people see it as a branch of military, even though it's not supposed to be one. A lot of people know it's not supposed to be one. A lot of people don't even know that it is saying that it's a branch of military now in Homeland Security. A lot of people don't understand the ramifications of that, to where they've moved military law, martial law, out of the Department of Defense and into the Department of Homeland Security. And I could go on and on, and this Coast Guard is looking for, to purchase submarines now. The Coast Guard is this extra-constitutional branch of military now. The executive branch and the U.S. government, or certain individuals who have basically captured the U.S. government over time, off and on, have tried to use the military, or actually use the military. Our Civil War is one example. There's a famous case of ex-party Milligan. The senators from the South passed something called the Posse Comitatus Act that prevents the military, our defense forces, from being used against our own people, because in the Civil War, that's exactly what they did under Reconstruction. Famous case of Reed versus Covert, 1957, in the midst of the Korean War, and just after World War II, when Russia became a nuclear superpower itself, the decision was originally upheld that military tribunals of American civilians were okay in 1956 ruling in Reed versus Covert by the Supreme Court, which then, upon rehearing, where the woman's father, Mrs. Covert's father, stepped forward, got the Attorney General and the Solicitor General involved to work to overturn the Supreme Court's own previous decision. And this is an important issue because it goes even to Citizens United case. The executive branch, if it desired, could use the Solicitor General and Attorney General and demand a rehearing on the case and have it overturned. They're not doing that. And these individuals should know, because it's case precedence, this has been done before. Reed versus Covert was one of the few times it was done. This is the 1950s. There is no reason why President Obama could not, should not, must demand, you know, and petition for, as the federal government branch, you know, executive branch, via the Solicitor General and Attorney General, for a rehearing on this case. And he is not doing that, which in my mind proves and shows where he's coming from. You know, and I could be wrong, because, you know, I've had a major epiphany myself being forced to study a lot of this stuff, where it's probably not so common knowledge, but I would put it upon others to get the word out on that and to have the executive branch overturn Citizens United, you know, through the court system by a rehearing in the Supreme Court.
Well, I certainly hope that would happen, but I see no indication that that's likely.
Right, because these people are fascist, I mean, through and through. You know, whether it's fascist, dark, or light, you've got a group of corporatists who are, you know, like in my own situation, the Coast Guard is protecting the shipping companies and the union. The union actually stood in federal district court and protected the shipping companies rather than me, the union member.
Absolutely, because the system is absolutely corrupt top to bottom and weighted against people like yourself who are trying to blow the whistle. So let's talk
a little... Well, it's weighted against all individuals. It's about the collective or the corporation or the institution and protecting that. And anybody who will do that, whether it's the United States, whether it's corporations, whether it's ongoing corruption internally, if you are willing to do anything to maintain the status quo, cover up the corruptions, then you've got a long and storied, you know, career in either the corporations, private industry, and or the government. And anyone who wishes to address corruption is moved to correct it. You know, I filed a civil suit in federal district court against the unions and the employers, the shipping companies, and the Coast Guard filed a cross complaint to quash those civil complaints and to decide those civil complaints by having me declared mentally incompetent.
So let's talk specifically about the decision on appeal and some of the items that were in that. I found one particularly interesting was the way they tried to refute your concerns about the constitutionality of the proceedings. And ultimately, it's interesting, they end by saying, therefore, although it is not my province to determine the validity of the constitutional claims raised by the respondent, I have little doubt that his claims would be found baseless upon further review.
Well, she says she doesn't have the authority, and then she goes, but let me weigh in on this anyways. You know, I'm paraphrasing, it's not exactly what she said, but it's exactly what she did. She first says she, you know, basically this isn't a constitutional court, and even Lieutenant Commander Brzezinski. The other thing, too, that she even notes in here, which is just amazing, and they didn't get into, I brought up in the appeal about the, you know, the judge saying it was an Article 32 proceeding. She ignores that. But she does address that the judge is a lieutenant commander, you know, uniformed service in the Coast Guard.
That's right. And yet they tried to indicate that this was tried by an independent counsel. So
a neutral trier of fact.
Right.
Yeah. Which, of course, not even close.
Not anywhere close. How could that statement even be made given the people who are in charge of this case? It's just insane.
The Coast Guard is the complaining party. They're the quote-unquote injured party. They're not showing any injury. There's no injury for them to bring a complaint. The ship didn't get run aground. I didn't do whatever. They actually bring up about labor disputes where the first assistant and who was also chief engineer at some point, he terminated me, fired me, after the fact, after I'd already been paid off and discharged. I found on this one vessel, the SS Maui, the boiler was leaking, the floor tubes in the boiler, and I found this on my watch. I reported it. Because we were in port, as per our contracts, I worked from 4 in the morning until 8 in the morning. And that, because it disrupts our sleep schedule, and when we're in port, it gives us, you know, certain privileges. That was considered my entire 8 hours. They're supposed to give me 4 hours back sleep, which is supposed to be covered employment, you know, paid rest time. If they were willing to sign me back onto the shipping articles and to say, "Don't worry, we'll pay you for the overtime," I would have worked no problem. But since this same individual, Cecil Ray, played games when my father was dying, was involved in firing me upon the death of my father, telling me that I had, leave, and then when I went to get back on the ship, they told me that I'd been terminated, so they lied to me. I would not have left the ship, and I would have stayed on, and I would have finished my job. had they not, you know, told me that they were affording me the leave that was due. Any and all of these disputes are supposed to be handled in a neutral grievance and arbitration process that they're paid to by the United States government, not only to construct and maintain, but what they've done is they've done away with it. So rather than having all of these matters heard in a neutral grievance and arbitration process for the industry, they're using the Coast Guard and its system of military tribunals, these Article 32 proceedings, to settle any and all disputes. And do it like they've done with me by just having you declared mentally incompetent. And trying to, you know, under most state laws, and most, you know, I believe it's international as well, if not also federal and military, they cannot force you under a doctor. And in these proceedings, they've tried multiple times over the course of 8 to 10 years. If there had been a diagnosis of me being, quote-unquote, mentally impaired or mentally incompetent, or as the commandant says, mentally ill, and saying that I, you know, refuse to seek treatment, you know, there's no supporting evidence to show that. They've actually falsified and fabricated medical records. They took medical records. It's like a questionnaire. It's called the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Index. Is MMPI-2. It's a like a it's a test that you can take or whatever. I had taken that test, and in there's a question. It's true or false. Evil spirits possess me at times. I, of course, answered false. The Coast Guard changed the answer, didn't even change it. They presented it as if I had said true, and put that into the proceedings. And that was not the only example, and this is all in the underlying motions back and forth, and the Coast Guard Commandant ignores all of that in her final order. But she says she's read all of the lower record. So she's a crook, a liar, a cheat, a thief. She's a criminal, and she is the same Coast Guard Vice Admiral who declared that the Coast Guard and BP are quote-unquote partners. Her name is Vice Admiral Sally Bryce O'Hara.
And
I'm sure...
Have you taken a look into her background or where she's coming from?
Oh, yeah. She's tied to the UK, Britain, and Germany. These royal families.
Any surprise
she's
there?
She's a handmaiden. I'm sorry?
Any surprise in that?
No, not at all. Because, you know, these people gain their benefits by who they know, who they're related to, not by merit. If you've seen this woman in a in her presentation on, I don't know if it was CNN, but it was, you know, national broadcast TV, she's an idiot. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. She can barely speak. When she spoke, and she's being instructed by somebody who is telling her that the Coast Guard and BP are partners. And what she is she's just parroting that information that's been force-fed into her or, you know, tried to be drilled into her by whomever her handlers are. She goes on national TV, and President Obama was there. There's a clip of it on the internet. You can find it. Just type in, you know, national or BP incident. Vice Admiral Sally Bryce O'Hara, BP and Coast Guard partners or something like that. And you may have to change up the query, but, you know, it's searchable and you can find it. But she's using the Coast Guard as a risk manager for the shipping companies, many of which are foreign-owned and foreign-controlled. So she's not just a simple criminal. She's carrying on treason. She's taking actions in my own situation, not to only attack me. And it is a crime to have somebody that you know, and there's exculpatory evidence. She even brings up about my 22-pound appeal. You know, it's like, why would you weigh the appeal?
It does show the lengths that they're willing to go to try to cast some sort of aspersion in whatever manner they can. It's quite ridiculous, isn't it?
And then they say that 22 pounds is all indecipherable.
Absolutely.
And in there, well, there's,
I should interject at this point to let the listeners know that the decision on appeal is, again, linked up at CorbettReport.com, so please go and download it from the documentation link for this interview. But it's been a few days now for you to digest this. I'm just wondering what kind of feedback you've had about this and what you've managed to, cull out of this document.
Well, I had to read it again yesterday after reading the initial time. And after reading it the first time, picking it up, getting it in hand, I kind of just went into auto mode and just kind of set it out of my mind and try to just keep myself busy with, busy work and menial tasks and doing whatever I could to keep my mind off of it, just let it kind of sink in. It really hit me yesterday, and I hate to say this, but a normal person would be depressed, would be upset, might even show signs that they were, quote unquote, mentally ill, if they were being charged and prosecuted. I mean, they tried to tie me, God forbid, or Christ's sake, with Timothy McVeigh. They put out a bolo on me saying that I may be dangerous. And how is somebody supposed to respond to that? How is somebody supposed to react to that? How is somebody supposed to maintain their wherewithal in the midst of personal attacks directed at me, not the issues, not about what I'm bringing up, not even about the formal. I mean, she mentions in the CDOA, Commandant's Decision on Appeal, they are aware of the formal civil complaints that were filed in federal district court that preexisted the complaint brought against me by the Coast Guard. And she dismisses them saying, well, they've been dismissed now and, they don't matter. And we had nothing to do with stepping on those cases. Even though they've had me in the military tribunal, as I was trying to prosecute and push those cases forward, and they intentionally stepped upon them and then prosecuted me aggressively within a military tribunal, as I am then, of course, losing my homes, put into a hotel room by the defendants from federal district court, who the Coast Guard and Homeland Security were working together with, as they keep me in a hotel room, and people don't understand this, like, well, why didn't you just leave? Why didn't you go? I had nothing left. They stripped me of everything, credit, you name it. They even, basically estranged me from my own family. Got my family to the point where they were scared of me because of all the stuff that Coast Guard, Homeland Security, and the United States government was saying about me.
Well, you bring up an important point there because you point out how is a non, a sane person supposed to react to the charge of mental incompetence and the charge of being depressed? I mean, it's the kind of thing that cannot be fought against, really, once the charge has been made.
But it goes on and has gone on for quite some time, and it's been reined in because of the reasons why it has gone on. People use it to steal their parents' property, put them in an old folks' home and take their home. Take their pension, take all their wealth, and have them declared incompetent. And oftentimes, there are issues, whether it's Alzheimer's or something else, but there's also a lot of corruption in that, where family members, for whatever reason, greedy, don't have the same moral fiber or background or character that, possibly you and I and others might have, to just, be appalled at even the thought of something like that. And there's other examples like a Mr. Ferrari, and this is why I bring up about the theft of death benefits we've talked about, because that's what's going on. That's a lot of what I'm trapped within. Somebody has already either profited from or will profit from my death. Guaranteed. They've set up and have life insurance on me, just like Walmart has done with its employees, and just like the military and federal government is doing with our military personnel. And there's, incidents like this that go to this issue, like the two women up in L.A. who were insuring the homeless. And it got to the point where I guess the checks weren't coming in quick enough from these people dying that they went out and started killing them off. And that's how they got caught. And they were cashing the Social Security checks for these people. That's but one example. Peachtree is another one. It's a corporation that goes out and, purchases your life insurance from you, continues to pay the life insurance on you, and now all of a sudden you're worth more dead than alive to someone else who is paying your premiums. And the quicker your premiums end, the more money they make. These are enormous and extremely corrupt rackets that are being run right now. And their only Prudential was just nabbed with this. And it's been out in the news. CBS has reported upon it. $100 million. And what Prudential was doing was a twist on it, where they weren't directly stealing the death benefits. They were holding on to the death benefits, investing the money, profiting from holding on to the majority of the sum of the death benefits instead of paying them out lump sum, and then taking 5 to 6% or more in interest and in payments, and then sending checks, not a lump sum check in full payment, but a group of checks so that the family could write checks off of the lump sum. So there's all these rackets that are going on, and it's all under the cover of the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, war in general, where we're at war without a proper declaration of war. The bailouts, the car industry, the auto industry, are not only our government, but our nation is being reconstructed right from underneath our nose. And it is by foreign, and I say royal, interests, whether it be Germany or the UK and or the European Union now. We've talked about on other programs or other interviews where the United Kingdom, all 54 member nation states, including England, are now members of the 27, if you include England, 26 if you don't, European Union. So it's actually 54 and 26, I guess, is 80 nation states that are all members of the European Union now. And no one gets that. No one gets that. No one gets the gravity of that and what that goes towards, because Canada is now part of the European Union.
I see what you're saying in the bigger sense, but I don't think that holds true for the actual implementation of the European Union or the European Parliament or anything to do with that, really.
Oh, I think it does. Bringing the UK into, and because even right now they're having disputes over the Falkland Islands, and they're taking this position that the Falkland Islands are part of the EU, and the Falkland Islands are a possession of the UK, of England. Britain. There's been disputes, about the Falkland Islands with Argentina for decades, if not 50, 60 years or more. Actually more, going back over 100 years.
Right. And that relates to Canada how?
Well, Canada's part of the UK.
Technically, no. The United Kingdom is Great Britain and Northern Ireland. You're referring to the Commonwealth, which is a different entity.
Yes, the Commonwealth, which is still, it is the United Kingdom.
Right. Right. So they all...
Who was the titular head to Canada?
Right. So it is the
Queen. The Queen of England.
Yes.
But you can get lost in semantics. And yes, technically, what you're saying is true, but when you analyze it more closely, the Queen of England, the Queen of Britain, the titular head to the United Kingdom is the titular head to Canada.
Right. And I don't dispute that. I think that that's true, and I think that's something that the Canadians and all the member Commonwealth states have to recognize and understand. But I'm talking about things like when we're talking about the Eurozone and implementation of European monetary policy and the European Court of Justice and European laws clearly do not apply to Commonwealth states.
Well, the Hague and the ICC, the International Criminal Court, all of this stuff is being implemented, and not just... some of it is in Germany, some of it's in the Netherlands. But the clear control of these world systems, world courts, is coming from Europe.
Absolutely. Well, I agree. Absolutely. There is the internationalist movement. But there's also the United Nations based in New York, which was really like Rockefeller Construction, which is obviously
right.
The globalist flag bearer, so to speak.
Right, and they all, you take your two hands and mix your fingers together, they all come together like that in the commingling of the efforts to bring everything together under one world government. And even like this, you know, the Captain Arthur French, involved in my own affairs, sent me a bunch of documents that he got when he was over in England, whether it was just to set me off, and he knew how I was, anti-British, anti-UK, pro-American, I guess would be a better way of saying it, and pro-Republic, pro-governance, self-governance of, by, and for the people, an anti-royalist. And I didn't have this position when all this stuff started. I've been driven to it by understanding and being forced to study who's doing this, not only to me, but in the bigger picture, and who's directly involved. Guys like J.P. Morgan, his great-grandson, is Archie Morgan IV, who is directly involved in my own affairs. Same thing with Alex Kaczynski, who sits on the Ninth Circuit, who's directly involved in my own affairs. Lieutenant Commander Brzezinski, the guy who's a Coast Guard officer, was or is, he's still working for the Coast Guard, and he was former counsel to the Coast Guard. He's now the presiding judge on Coast Guard matters, totally conflicted. He's involved in price fixing on oil involving Iran and the run-up of oil prices around the world, and in blocking oil parts through commerce cases, Commerce Department administrative cases, in blocking oil pump parts and getting into Iran to intentionally take oil off the market in the lead up to the war. These are the kind of people that I'm surrounded by. These are the kind of people that are sitting in judgment of me.
And then the ones who will hear your appeal.
Well, the NTSB has been, as far as I can tell, and maybe not, because they have taken efforts to try to defend themselves, protect themselves, and keep control of their own turf, but they already have Coast Guard investigators who are now working for the NTSB. Guys that were investigators within the Coast Guard who have, through whatever means, found their way into and are working for the National Transportation Safety Board. My appeal, after being with a branch of military, self-declared, self-proclaimed, it's not in dispute. I think you've read the Commandant's decision on appeal that was just published October 30th, 2010, from charges, brought against me on March 6, 2003, that the Coast Guard believes it's a branch of military.
That's right.
Now, that was clear to you from the
Sorry,
read,
what was the date on that again? Obviously, October 30th, 2010.
No. October 30th, sorry.
September
30th. 2010, right.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No, September 30th. We're in October right
now. Yeah, it's currently October 16th, so it would have to be September.
So okay. It couldn't be October 30th. No, I thought I said September 30th, but 2010. But those are from charges brought March 6th, 2003. How can you keep somebody in an administrative proceeding? And how is it not waste, fraud, abuse, and gross mismanagement? And how does it not violate the presumption of innocence? Because under our shipping articles, 46 U.S.C. 10302, anyone and everyone involved in any dispute over the shipping articles, our employment on board, has 30 days. They didn't bring any kind of grievance or dispute or complaint against me for something that I did on board these ships and do it from underneath the shipping articles. They waited 15 months after the second incident, that they call it an incident. I didn't do anything wrong. The Maui... they're blaming me, saying that I refused to work, which is not true. I had already been paid off and discharged. The company even rescinded the letter that this chief engineer, he was only chief engineer for a couple weeks. He'd never been chief. He had been first assistant engineer, and they promoted him, probably to send the letter, do whatever. But the shipping company went ahead and rescinded his letter that he sent out after the fact, after I left the vessel, because I'd already been paid off. One of the things I was bringing up about in my grievances, they paid us off on Saturday through Monday. And they're not supposed to do that, because one of the documents they file and sign and give to us is a federal document. They're not supposed to post-date or predate federal documents, period. You date it on the date it's issued. That's it. If they wanted to pay us off up through Saturday and then pay us off again through Monday and hold the discharge until we complete our work. Because there's certain things that go with that. When you're on the shipping articles and you're still signed on, you're protected. You're an employee of that company. If you sign off and you're paid off and you're on board the vessel and you get injured, they'll say, well, he was paid off. He shouldn't have been on the vessel. It's his own fault. So I'm trying to protect myself and do what is right, and also fight for my family. You know, my dad fought for his own life for 78 days, and the company and the time my father was fighting for his own life, it actually looked like he was going to survive and do better. We were trying to move him out into aftercare when I was forced to get back on the ship because they said I could not have any more leave, even though in our shipping articles it says we can have leave. So the union and the shipping companies were intentionally denying me leave, screwing with me, because about a year and a half before that, I had tried to stop an explosion on board a government vessel, a Maritime Administration vessel known as the SS Comet, tried to stop dumping of hazardous materials on the same vessel. I refused to light off the boilers, even though it was my job as second assistant engineering officer in charge of the boilers, and I refused because what they were doing was unsafe. So they ordered the third assistant engineering officer to light off the boiler. He went ahead and did it. There was an explosion, a flashback, and he got burned. Had I done it, I would have been burned, and they probably would have blamed me. But instead, because I saw what they were doing was, you know, unsafe, he gets burned. They terminated me after I tried to stop them from dumping the boiler water in the harbor up in Alameda. And then they go ahead and promote the third who got burned to my position and continue to employ him.
Well, that speaks volumes to the system itself, but going back to the point of the length of time that this case has been being prosecuted, I mean, that in and of itself should show that the Coast Guard has been taking extreme care to try this case, because obviously it is precedent-setting.
Well, because they're basically retaliating against a whistleblower. They're creating their own case law. They're creating their own laws, rules, and regulations by being I don't know if you caught this in the Commandant's decision on appeal, but the Commandant basically threw out my appeal, found every reason to do it, say, oh, you didn't do this, you didn't file it, and, you know, yada, yada, even though she contradicts herself on almost every point, because she found 149 or whatever it was issues. So they must have been clear issues. And rather than going to those 149 issues and dispensing with them affirmatively on the record and either saying that this item and this item are duplicative and I'm going to address them here as one, she basically threw them out and came up with her own appellate issues. So they're sitting in every position. They are the complainant party or injured party. The Coast Guard is the citing party or summoning party. The Coast Guard is the investigating party. The Coast Guard is the prosecuting party. The Coast Guard is the court. The Coast Guard is the appellate body. And they're all, oh, by the way, part of a branch of military. So talk about good old boy system. This is a good old boy system on acid and on steroids in some, you know, medieval town in ancient Europe, where they think that they can carry on privy councils and star chambers and basically go after an individual and torture them. And then as the end result of the torture, if you scream out in pain or agony from what's going on, like putting a bolo out on you, a be on the lookout wanted or warning poster, or falsifying medical records and saying that you said that evil spirits possess you at times when you didn't, on and on and on, and do this for 8 or 10 years, and then use that as a confession that you are saying that you are mentally ill.
Exactly, and you just brought up a great point that I didn't even really consider, is that she does talk in the decision about how, you know, the 22 pounds of appeal filings and things, but then goes on to put basically in your mouth the 12 points that she wants to address out of all of those filings, and then right. It proceeds to address those without addressing all of the other things that you brought up.
Right, they're saying, she said that those were, you know, that they have the authority, just like the judge from the lower court, to do anything, but she won't review any new evidence or evidence from the lower proceeding. She'll leave that undisturbed. But then she comes in and uses the same power that the quote-unquote judge has and says that she's going to throw out repetitious, I'm trying to think of the language she uses, it's, you know, quoted from the Coast Guard regs or whatever, where it gives her the power to basically dispense with anything that they don't like by saying that it's, I'm trying to find the... See if I can find it here real quick. I have it up in front of me, just in case. Here it is. This includes exclude irrelevant, immaterial, or unduly repetitious evidence. So basically, they can use that clause to throw out anything they don't like.
Exactly. I mean, she just decides what is, you know, irrelevant or what is repetitious.
But who am I in the big picture of things? How important am I as one individual where they will use a branch of military to do this? Yes, there's the billions of dollars in theft of federal, DOT, Department of Transportation, and Federal Department of Defense funds, and where they're trying to create this military court system and even expand upon it. But if they're willing to do this in my situation, what do you think happened relating to 9/11 and those commission hearings with Keene and Hamilton? Hamilton is one of those names, and I've mentioned this to you before. It's a large corporate manufacturing family here in the United States that makes jet drives and all sorts of other stuff. And that name goes back to Alexander Hamilton, and Hamilton was a loyalist. He was a royalist. Even though he served in the United States federal government, that man was loyal to England, to the United Kingdom. He's the one who started the revenue cutter Marine and was chastised, which the Coast Guard keeps trying to trace its roots back to, not the 1915 when it was created. But Hamilton created this extra constitutional branch of military under the Treasury Department, was chastised for doing so and not only nationalizing it, but federalizing it. His peers broke it up and turned it back over to the local authorities and the local custom houses. They won't talk about that. They want the Coast Guard to be this national, federal, extra-constitutional branch of military that exists outside of the Department of Defense and traces its roots back to Alexander Hamilton and 1791 and the Revenue Cutter Marine.
Well, exactly, and you bring up a good parallel there with the 9/11 Commission, which we obviously know was rigged from top to bottom, but we had further confirmation if any were needed last week when Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, who was in a military intelligence unit called Able Danger that was tracking the so-called hijackers up to 1 year before the event, he came out this last week on Fox News and said, yes, I mean, I talked to Zelikow, I talked to other commission members, and they basically admitted that the entire commission was rigged top to bottom and every single commission member had an agenda to put forward on that commission. So.
But it's even more disturbing because that was it was not a judicial commission. We used to have the courts, our independent court system, carry on commissions and or tribunals and appoint people that are called special masters who are judges with very specific detailed training or expertise in a certain area, say banking or whatever, shipping. And they're called upon and they form a commission to go after, as a member of the Article 3 independent judiciary, to find the truth. The Keene Commission, the 9/11 Commission, was an executive branch that the individual who was appointed as a special master was, what's his name? I've talked to you about him before. He's a guy involved with Monsanto, and he's Obama's Pazar. His name escapes me right now. I can't believe why. Because
myself as well.
But I'll think of it before we end the conversation. Hopefully, these people are just overtly, enormously corrupt. That to the point where I would not feel, and I hate to use it because it sounds almost religious. These people are evil. They are downright. They're sociopaths. And they feel no compunction in killing people and stealing their property. They're doing it in Afghanistan. They're doing it in Iraq. We have no business being there.
That's exactly right. Well, I think the sociopathic nature of the system is certainly making itself apparent these days. And what more blatant case can there be than a case like yours, where whistleblowers are retaliated against in such a way to destroy constitutional protections for citizens everywhere, and to really fully implement the martial law that's been creeping into place for decades now.
Well, creeping, but now it's full force, full effect, to where, you know, the creation of Department of Homeland Security was probably the most dangerous thing that happened in the United States. And at some point, the Department of Homeland Security needs to be dissolved, and we need to return to the way things were, because we were much safer. Things were getting done. I mean, what happened on 9/11, they took the planes out. Cheney sent the jets on a fool's errand. You know, the jets that should have gone after and been able to shoot down the planes before they hit the buildings, and would have even been able to go up and see who was in the cockpit, if anyone was in the cockpit, and if those planes were not on autopilot.
But because Eric, you can't expect the United States Air Force to actually be able to intercept a plane over the United States. That's just crazy conspiracy talk.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Not that not that the system isn't planned and designed that way. We know, you know, and I know you know, who was it, Payne Weber, or no, a golfer?
Oh, Payne Stewart, yeah.
Payne Stewart, yeah. Payne Weber, I was thinking of, you know, that's the investment firm. Payne Stewart, his plane went off course, and within a matter of minutes, they were up and on him and were able to see what was going on and, you know, address the issue. You know, on 9/11, Cheney was in charge of running a secret op that mirrored what actually happened on 9/11, and that is numerically or astronomically, I guess, for one of a more expansive system of numbers, impossible. That could not occur unless it was planned. And that's in the 9/11 Commission report.
It is, and that it's not just one particular drill or one particular war game that was being played on that day, as researchers like Webster Tarpley have pointed out. It was up to 26 different drills going on directly on that morning that directly affected the response. So
there was people that showed up in New York the day before.
There, yeah, the FEMA team for the biohazard drill. There was all sorts of things. Obviously, Global Guardian was going on at the time, which envisions things like planes being hijacked and flown into New York City and blown up, and all sorts of things. The National Reconnaissance Office having a hijacked jet flown into it on the morning of 9/11 in the drill.
But if you go a little bit deeper and you go into who owns and controls those buildings, it's the Port Authority. The Port Authority owns and controls the World Trade Centers.
That's right, and they leased it out to Silverstein 6 weeks before.
That's the Department of Transportation. That is what's tied to the former Secretary of Transportation, Andrew Card, under the first Bush, and then Chief of Staff under the second Bush. The attacks upon the World Trade Center in 1993, those were pre-planned, had nothing to do with the blind sheik, unless they, you know, somehow were able to recruit him in there as a stooge. You know, I mean, come on, a blind sheik, right? Yeah, that's not laughable. And those attacks, though, were to get at the plans and to open up a hole and carry out a test on the buildings so that they could take them down.
That's right, and in fact, one of the least researched areas of 9/11 itself was the car bombs and other things that were potentially taking place or set up to take place on that morning that may have impacted the buildings themselves. That's a whole different issue that definitely deserves attention, but in fact, Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta put out a document called Preserving America's Lifelines or something like that, that was about the morning of 9/11 and some of the extremely unusual occurrences that were taking place on 9/11, such as cars, trucks, and vans that were literally painted up with pictures of, quote, remote-controlled jets flying into the World Trade Center, being stopped by NYPD in the vicinity of WTC on that day, and having Arabic-looking men, so to speak, and that was almost a direct quote from the document, being questioned and then let go. Just really bizarre things like that that are actually in that document. So there is definitely some very interesting things. And everyone knows that Norman Mineta had some of the key testimony at the 9/11 Commission hearing talking about Cheney in the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, basically directing the plane into the Pentagon.
Well, the individual that I am allowed to or afforded to by statutory right under the Merchant Marine Act of 1936 is to write letters of complaint to the Secretary of Transportation, who was Norm Mineta. And as you saw, if you've read my Commandant's decision on appeal that's been put out against me, Norm Mineta is mentioned in there.
That's right, yes. And that was mentioned.
He was one of the witnesses.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Because I wrote a whistleblower letter to Norm Mineta, and the Coast Guard has used that as evidence against me in these proceedings to have me declared mentally incompetent, mentally impaired, mentally ill.
That is right. So, I mean, that obviously begs the question of how they got access to the letter.
It's been handed over to them by either Norm Mineta or it's been, they grabbed it. It was intercepted. I mean, people don't understand. They have agents, operatives, working as a fifth column element throughout our government, throughout these corporations, and they're trying to take us over the edge, just like they did in Germany, so that they can develop new technologies, new weapons, new materials, and more, because they know that they can leapfrog technology and even wealth to an extent and suppress the rest of the people and put them under their thumb with that technology by use of a war. Think of how our world changed because of everything that came out of World War II, if not even World War I. Weapons technology, that was then converted for commerce, trade, and transportation. Same thing in, even the Korean War, Vietnam War, all of these other little wars in between, but most importantly, this ongoing I hate to even call it a war because there is no declaration of war, but this, proverbial war, just like war on drugs, war on poverty, war on terror, to where they're using the military-industrial complex to leapfrog technology and wealth over the rest of the people, use it to do so, to hold that technology and wealth in as few hands as possible.
Well, I wanted to bring up a point from the decision on appeal, point number 10, which I found particularly disturbing, where they address your allegations that the medical or personal records were obtained regarding your supposed condition through untowards means. And they actually said that there is nothing in the record indicating that the records were obtained improperly. I mean,
well, that's not true.
Absolutely. How could that possibly be not true?
Well, there's also no information in there that shows that they were. I asked Captain French in the proceedings, when you looked at these documents, did you see any kind of a written release from me? He answered, no. He should not have looked at them. That's the first thing that a doctor's required. If you're going to look at and review somebody's records, you need a release from them, unless you're their doctor. He's not my doctor. And then the thing is, too, that goes in back into that issue, is the Coast Guard is trying to force, paid at Federal Express, a doctor of their choosing, not mine. Not my own doctors. So they want to force me under their doctors. They even went as far as to bring in their own doctor, who's a uniformed Coast Guard officer, to support and to say that I'm mentally ill.
That's right. And they made that point in the decision on appeal that, oh, you had the nerve to actually say that you didn't want to use their doctor. which apparently, according to their own administrative procedure rules, they're allowed to do. I mean, it's just absolutely insane.
By their own rules, it also say that the issue of patient privacy and patient-doctor privilege, it's akin to attorney-client privilege. It's the same thing. It's been ruled in a Supreme Court case, Jeffrey v. Redmond. The Supreme Court upheld this is for a policeman, a man who carries a gun, and is in charge of law enforcement, which is, I would say, as critical, if not more critical, than an officer in the Merchant Marine. You know, because they come into contact with a lot more people and a lot more. We're out on a ship, and you got maybe 20, 30 people on board. It's like, you know, how much damage can you do? Whereas a police officer can do a heck of a lot more damage. But for this police officer, it was ruled by the Supreme Court, and this is where, you know, privacy and privilege has been expanded upon. They ruled that the wife, I believe it was, of the woman that he shot, because he shot somebody, he went to see a counselor and to have somebody to cope with it with. And whether there was a criminal act or not or whatever, that conversation, whether it's like an attorney or even a priest, is privileged because they want to encourage people to, you know, right or wrong, whatever happened, to go and get it off their chest, because they know that people are only as sick as their secrets. And if they can get it off their chest, talk about it with somebody who can understand and keep it in private, you know, because not everybody has family members that they can do it with. Not everybody can go home to their wife and explain. And you know, that's a good way to ruin a marriage, is go home and talk to your wife about a murder or a shooting and get into detail about it. That's why there's trained professionals that you can go to, and that's supposed to be protected. But also Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, and, you know, whatever people feel about him, he did do some good things. He put out an executive order, which goes to all federal agencies, departments, including the military. It's been incorporated in the UCMJ and more, protecting the right of privacy and privilege for doctor-patient. And it's been legislated by all 50 states. But the Coast Guard feels it's some anomaly that does not have to follow federal executive orders, does not have to follow Supreme Court decisions on a myriad of issues, you know, one being military tribunals of civilians, Jaffe v. or Reed v. Covert, 1957, that made these military tribunals illegal. Jaffe v. Redmond, which goes to the issue of privacy and privilege, that they say, because think about it, if I had been diagnosed, they would have a record of it. They would have to, how would they find out about it? They're saying that my behavior on board was the indication or the red flag, and they're going to jump to the, they're not trying to take blood tests. They're not trying to have a CAT scan done of being like a brain scan. They're not doing a chemical workup. They're not trying to see if I'm on drugs. They want to force me into a psych exam, and not just a psych exam, but a psych exam that is held off the record, unrecorded, that they will use some doctor that they hire to come back in through the hearsay rule and to report upon it, use it as hearsay to find me guilty.
Right, so maybe the Watergate White House plumbers didn't need to break into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatric's office. Maybe they could have just gotten the Coast Guard to start an administrative proceeding against him.
Well, they should have. They should have said, well, he's a Merchant Marine. We're voluntarily inducting him into the Merchant Marine, yep, so that we can pull him into an unlawful, unwarranted psych exam. But you see how, like, and you bring up a good issue, like in Watergate and what they did with Ellsberg, that this is exactly, and that's why it was outlawed in the Whistleblower Protection Act, and requires a due process hearing if they go to do anything like this, like a fitness for duty exam. The Whistleblower Protection Act of 1989 amends the Administrative Procedure Act that the Coast Guard is trying to use to go after civilian mariners. But in the Administrative Procedure Act, this is more stuff that they're just violating all over the place. In the Administrative Procedure Act, it bars any branch of military from using the APA or administering the Administrative Procedure Act. It also is in Title 10 and the UCMJ, barring and prohibiting any military personnel from administering civilian affair. It's also in Title 18 as criminal code, barring any military personnel from getting in and administering civilian affairs. And yet that is exactly what the Coast Guard is doing.
All right. Well, we are moving into the final minutes of our conversation here. So anything you'd like to say in wrap up?
So do you think I'm crazy? I'm kidding. I mean, you see why they're going after me. And, they, you know, this is why we have the marathon and why the marathon has become a, you know, such a tribute to the original runner, because that is exactly how, and it's almost like a sign so that people would understand if they knew the story behind it, that they, the military, the enemy, used the method of attacking the messenger to kill the message. And that more damage, you know, when you see something like this going on to an individual, there's clearly something wrong, and it's not that individual.
Where there's smoke, there's fire, and in some cases, there's a raging inferno. So well, absolutely, people need to look.
The first judge, McKenna, who recused himself, and they won't say why, and you probably saw that in there, that the second judge who came in, Brzezinski, ruled that all of McKenna's orders are valid. So he basically stepped into McKenna's shoes. And then McKenna has not given a reason why he's recused himself, which makes all of his rulings in question. Because he's not come out and said, well, I'm conflicted, and that's why I've recused myself, or I can't partake in this. You know, he didn't say his dog died and I can't, you know, be a judge anymore or whatever. He won't say. He hasn't said. And to come back and say that now is such a violation of due process that it can't be corrected. Just like them coming back and trying to correct that they falsified medical records, that is immediate dismissal. Dismissal of the charges and make me whole. But they cannot and will not do that because the Coast Guard is trying to expand this program to include not just people with mariner's license, because they want people with a private boat to have a Coast Guard license. So if you own a boat, they can go after you. You own a sailboat, they can go after you. You own a little motorboat, powerboat, yacht, they can go after you.
All right. Well, again, an incredibly large issue and one that we will be talking about again in the future, including, of course, tomorrow, I guess, on RBN. So people should, again, stay tuned to In the Zone, Republic Broadcasting, Saturday nights, 9 p.m. Pacific. So, Lieutenant Eric Schein, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and we will continue to dissect this decision on appeal and everything else related to your case. So thank you once again for joining me.